This land is your land. This land is mine. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest, the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Hello, everybody. This is Basma Farhat. And this week on The People Speak, along with our board operator, Carrie Minaj, we will be interviewing the founders of Iraq Veterans Against the War, Tim Goodrich, and a young gentleman that is currently serving in the military and will remain under the name of Mike. You can join us here on Pal Talk by going to www.paltalk.com and downloading and installing the software. Create a nickname and you can come into the virtual auditorium and actually interact with our guest speakers. Or you can listen to us on CWRN, which is Cosmic Waves Radio, and that is our network that we're broadcasting over. We'll be back with you in just a couple of minutes with the show. Thank you all for joining us this evening. This is going to be an exciting and, I believe, a rewarding and enlightening and truth-revealing show. We need to know when the people speak, they listen. Go ahead, guys.
The People Speak radio show is being broadcast over a shoutcast stream at CosmicWavesRadio.com. That's CosmicWavesRadio, one word, .com. It is also being broadcast in an interactive audio chat room at PalTalk, www.paltalk.com.
This is Chevy Chase. When Richard Nixon abused power, Congress held a serious bipartisan investigation that resulted in articles of impeachment. Strong evidence suggests that George Bush and Dick Cheney launched an illegal war and lied to Congress, spied on Americans without court approval, leaked classified information, produced phony news reports, imprisoned without charge and tortured, used illegal weapons and targeted civilians. Let's get them out of here. Ask your Congress member to co-sponsor House Resolution 635 for an investigation.
Sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
Thank you. Welcome back, everyone. We're here with our guest, Tim Goodrich, of the Iraq Veterans Against the War, and a friend of his, Mike, who will remain, who will be referred to as Mike in this program. He's currently serving in the military. Tim, everybody here is just, you know, profoundly on the side of the Iraqi veterans against the war, or a majority of the people here. We really, really are very pro-anti-war. Tell us about your experience in the military, and tell us some of the real truth about Iraq, things that we don't hear. I mean, we know what they tell us. We know what we're told to believe. We want to know the truth. You were there. Tell us about what it was like.
Well, that's a very broad, general question. I can't tell you my personal experience. I really wasn't aware of what U.S. foreign policy was, which is kind of ironic because I was over in the Middle East on three separate occasions helping to implement it. And my turning point was specifically when I was sent over for my last deployment before my enlistment ended. I was sent to Saudi Arabia helping the Operation Southern Watch missions, which was patrolling the no-fly zone over Iraq. And I had done one of these before, but this time things were a little bit different. About 6 months before the war started in Iraq, the bombing of Iraq intensified by about 500%, and all this happened at the same time as President Bush was going on TV and saying that we're going to try diplomacy first. So obviously that was enough to lead me to question, and I, after some research, I came to be against the war, and that led to the founding of Iraq Veterans Against the War. IVAW continues to grow, and we're seeing a great rise in membership, especially this year. And the troops are really tired of being over in Iraq, and I think that's evident, especially when you look at the Military Times poll that was conducted a few months ago that showed that 72% of the troops in Iraq, this poll was done of active duty troops, and 72% want the troops home from Iraq by the end of 2006. 29% of them want the troops home immediately. And that's our own military, which is normally ultra-conservative, speaking about this.
Thank you. Mike, can you enlighten us a little bit about your personal experiences and why you have decided to affiliate yourself with Iraq Veterans Against the War?
Yes. Unlike Tim, I was actually home to see the start and the beginning of the invasion. I didn't leave for Iraq until about 2004. And what I saw was pretty much a rush to war that was unnecessary. From the get-go, you were able to see the president just pretty much come on the TV and just give kind of these weak reasons for starting a war. But being a soldier myself, you know, I just had to go along with what the orders were. And after a year and no weapons were determined, it was kind of, you know, the questions were raised as why are we doing this if the reasons were, from the get-go, were given that this is, you know, the reasons why we're going just never add up. And while I was in Iraq, I was in Saddam Hussein's hometown, which is Crete. I was there for a year, and that's where I spent my time. The majority of my time, I spent my time pretty much either doing convoys or working on aircraft.
You know, gentlemen, we hear a lot about wartime atrocities, and we all know that throughout the history of mankind, there have always been atrocities committed during wartime. Is this something that you either of you have witnessed in Iraq? Have you, Tim? Are there veterans in the organization right now that currently speak out about these atrocities? Are you speaking out about these atrocities?
Well, I didn't see any atrocities firsthand because my experience in country in Iraq, not besides the combat support that we were providing out of Saudi Arabia, I went to Iraq as a civilian after leaving the military, and I didn't see any atrocities firsthand, but I heard about them all the time. The Iraqi people know that it occurs all the time. And I met with mothers who had lost their kids, whether it be collateral damage or an actual atrocity that happened. Either way, it shouldn't be happening. And the U.S. presence in Iraq is ultimately fueling the insurgency. So now what we see is we're fighting the people that we originally went there to liberate. And I think this is only natural for people to fight back when they're under an occupation such as the one that they're facing now.
Mike, do you have anything to that you would like to add to this? As far as witnessing any of these events?
No, ma'am. I do not witness any events of atrocities because my mission was combat support. I pretty much, if I was on the roads, I was on the roads just to go from point A to point B. That wasn't my job. And they're actually very restrictive of where troops go while you are in country. And if you're not allowed, if you're not combat, then you're not out on the road. So as far as atrocities go, as a soldier, I am deeply, deeply offended by those who deviate from their orders that they're given. And it pretty much sickens me as an American to see that. But you pretty much have to allow the courts to take, go through the process and see if these are, men or women are guilty of the crimes that they've been accused of. And pretty much allow the court process to come through.
Well, by your statement, Mike, I would assume that, and correct me if I'm wrong, I don't mean to assume anything, you then, as others have heard, you too have heard of these things happening, just have not actually witnessed any of them. Is that what I'm sensing here?
Absolutely, and speaking on behalf of other members of Iraq Veterans Against the War, just repeating some stories that I've heard from our other members in the different events that we've done and hearing from them, I can tell you that a lot of our members have been involved in these atrocities, not necessarily atrocities that happened on purpose, but things that were on accident. And that's the nature of an occupation when you have two different languages being spoken and combat stress is involved and all these other issues that our soldiers are facing over there. For example, what happens on probably a daily basis over in Iraq is somebody gets shot at a checkpoint. An Iraqi gets shot at one of the checkpoints that the U.S. has set up because they get too close. And they can't read the signs. Obviously, you can't read a sign that says, stay 300 meters away if you're 300 meters away. And
makes sense.
It does happen. And just recently, we saw in the news that two Iraqi women were shot dead in their car, and one of them was pregnant because they got too close to one of the checkpoints.
Tell me,
also,
Tim, go right ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No problem, ma'am. If you're at a checkpoint, the thing is that the adrenaline is pumping. You're afraid of your life. Every vehicle that comes up to a checkpoint is a potential enemy, no matter who's behind the driver's wheel. And if you see a driver who is nervous, who's hesitant, you automatically clue on them and think that they might be the one with a VBED IED, which is the vehicle-borne IED, and which is pretty much being a car bomb that will blow up in your face. And soldiers are pretty much in fear of their lives when they see those kind of Iraqis approaching the checkpoint. It's pretty much, you put the soldier in a, is this person going to hurt me? Is they not going to hurt me? Pretty much, it's because of the nature of the war and the nature of the occupation that you pretty much make the soldier, question, is everybody going to kill them every day?
Tim, do you believe the president led us into this war on a lie?
Without a doubt. I think that the president had every intention of going into Iraq well before the initial invasion in March of 2003. When exactly did he devise these plans? I can't tell you, but I can tell you it was at least 6 months before. And like I mentioned, when I saw the bombing increase, while he was saying that we were going to try diplomacy first, I took that as a bold-faced lie, and I saw it firsthand.
Didn't that seem to endanger you, being in a position of suddenly realizing that what you were there in Iraq to do was not what you were told was going to happen? Didn't that put you in some kind of a psychological disadvantage, Tim?
Well, yes, it does. It's hard to fight for a mission when you don't believe in the mission. And that's what a lot of our troops today are facing. They're facing the question of why, or what noble cause. Why am I risking my life to die for what I consider to be a lie? That's one of the most common questions being asked. When somebody signs on the dotted line to defend and protect the Constitution of the United States, that's saying a lot. Coming from the individual person, they're willing to give their life for that piece of paper and everything that it stands for. And as a soldier, all you ask for is that if you're going to be placed in harm's way and risk giving your life, that it be for a good reason. And Iraq, obviously, is not a good reason.
Mike, still in the military as we speak, how do you feel about, let's face it, right now soldiers are being deployed on 2 and 3 and 4, up to 4 tours of duty. What if they send you back? Will you resist this?
Main reason, I personally would not resist this, and I don't speak for the veterans against Iraq wars, because I go for my friends. I don't go for the idea of the mission that the President of the United States has been trying to put across. I'm there for my soldiers. I feel that my actions can help save the lives of my soldiers, and that's what I fight for. And until the day I put down the uniform, I will continue to try to bring every soldier home as safe as I possibly can.
Well, I can certainly understand that. Go ahead, Tim. Go right ahead.
There's different schools of thought out there, and one of the other schools of thought out there is that, no, I will not go over to Iraq, and I'll refuse orders if they're given to me because I don't believe in this war. And we saw that recently. Lieutenant Aaron Watada, one of our members up in Seattle, Washington, based at Fort Lewis, he's the first officer to refuse his orders to go to Iraq. That just happened a matter of a couple weeks ago.
Bravo.
The website for that is thankyult.com. .com or .org. So we're seeing more and more of this. Soldiers refusing their orders, and it's kind of funny how it coincides with the release of a new documentary about the soldiers anti-war movement in Vietnam called Sir No Sir. This is an award-winning documentary that was just put out. It doesn't even mention the word Iraq, but I think it's making a lot of soldiers think when they see this, because they realize that an entire generation did it before them back in the Vietnam War. That's what ultimately helped end that war. And actually, we're at IVAW, we're in partnership with the film's producer, and they have given us 500 free copies to send out to those who have served since September 11th, which also is our membership base. And you can get a free copy for yourself if you served since 9/11, or for a friend or relative. If you go to the IVAW.org website, you can fill out the form and order a free copy to be sent. And we're sending those out to troops who have served since 9/11, active duty troops now, people in Iraq right now even.
Well, you know, too, Mike, I did not mean to offend you when I bravoed our homegrown refusenik, because I understand exactly what you're saying. Yeah, I understand where you're coming from, because we've heard here, I have a cousin that's a Marine. I also have one of my dearest friends, who is married to my cousin. Their son is a Navy SEAL and has been he went into Afghanistan before anybody. His best friend was the first fifth person to die to the war in Afghanistan. So I know what you're saying when you're saying we're going there. And this is something that a lot of military people have told us. They say, we're not going there to fight for America. We are going there to help our brothers and sisters that are in combat there. We want them to come back alive. We need to help them. And that's kind of scary, because we put ourselves into a position where we are going to war with another nation, not necessarily for any good or just reason, but because we want to protect the people that we're sending to die. And that's crazy. That's total insanity.
And that's the reality that I deal with. And that's the reality that that as a soldier serving in a war that is pretty much illegal and unjust, that is the main thought, that you are pretty much have given up the idea of any kind of just cause, and you're there just simply to aid and protect the other soldiers around you and try to bring them home safe.
Is this prevalent in the soldiers? Is this message something that the soldiers all discuss openly?
Soldiers just want to come home. If you'd have told my unit that they could have gone home maybe 3 to 4 months after being there, they'd have packed the bags and came home. If everybody was able to come home at that point, we'd have all stopped what we were doing, got up, hopped on the plane, and went back home.
Unbelievable. Thank you. And we're going to take a break right now, but there's a couple of questions I'd like to ask you about the organization itself, Tim, as soon as we come back. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back. Carrie Minaj, our coordinator here, will be playing our public service announcements.
In America, most of us have the basics we need to survive. But there are millions of children all over the world who don't. Children who must work instead of going to school. Children who were forced to fight as child soldiers. Children who can't have an ordinary childhood because they lack health care, clean water, or good nutrition. For these children, there is UNICEF. UNICEF works in 157 countries and territories, providing children with what they need to survive and grow. To learn more, visit unicefusa.org or call 1-800-4-UNICEF.
PalTalk is the largest and most popular internet chat community in the world, with over 39 million registered users worldwide. There are approximately 4 million active users and between 30 and 70,000 people using PalTalk at any given time, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The PalTalk support staff cover 32 basic languages and countless dialects. PalTalk is pretty much comparable to any major city in the world, the virtual online equivalent of a global community.
I'm Tim Goodrich, co-founder of Iraq Veterans Against the War. When I joined the military, I did it to serve and defend my country. At the time, I never imagined that our leadership would knowingly take us into an illegal preemptive war like the one in Iraq. I finished my enlistment, but now I am continuing my service to our country by advocating for the impeachment of George Bush and Dick Cheney. In order for democracy to flourish, we must have full accountability. Please call your elected officials today and urge them to support impeachment proceedings. We cannot wait any longer. The time to act is now.
Sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
You heard it from Tim Goodrich's mouth, people. Tim, talk to us about the impeachment of President George W. Bush and Vice President Cheney. What are the actions that the organization Iraq Veterans Against the War are taking in order to procure an impeachment process? And how are you aiding vets that are struggling with this dichotomy in patriotism that they're dealing with right now?
Well, IVAW is a nonpartisan, non-political organization. And we stand for three main things. It doesn't include impeachment, but the three main things we stand for is to bring the troops home now, support them when they return, and also to make sure Iraq gets reconstructed, because we owe it to the Iraqi people to help rebuild their country. As far as impeachment goes, many of our members support impeachment of George Bush and Dick Cheney, and I think we need to clarify one thing first about impeachment. Impeachment does not mean that they will be removed from office. Impeachment is just an investigation into any wrongdoing that they may have done. And I think that's fair given the circumstances that we've seen. I think there's more than enough suspicion out there to warrant impeachment proceedings. And I think even though we don't have control of the House as Democrats right now, I still think that we can move forward and get this discussion out into the general public.
Exactly. Mike, do you believe the president should be impeached?
Without a doubt, but we definitely do need to at least start with simple investigations and how the intelligence would even handle it as the war was beginning. Because we, as American people, is pretty much on the whole has remained silent and just watched it happen.
Let me ask you something, Tim and Mike. Speaking of rebuilding Iraq, which even if we didn't want to do it at all, we still have a moral obligation, according to Geneva War Conventions, to rebuild communities that we destroy. So even if we wanted to say we did this out of the goodness of our hearts, we really don't. But let me ask you, can we rebuild Iraq and withdraw the troops at the same time, considering the situation as it is now? Is that even a possibility?
Well, absolutely. We realize now that our presence in Iraq and our military presence in Iraq is fueling the insurgency, and the people in Iraq need to know that we don't intend to have a permanent presence there. Unfortunately, the reconstruction efforts have ground largely to a halt, and that's because of the decrease in the security situation. There is no security in Iraq, therefore reconstruction can't take place. In the first 3 years of the war, $20 billion was earmarked for reconstructing Iraq, but a lot of that was spent on just procuring the security needed. And then a lot of projects were not finished because the security wasn't good enough to finish them. So we absolutely do owe to the Iraqis, and we can do that by withdrawing. And it will be easier to do that by withdrawing. What we have to do is make sure that the Iraqis can control their own destiny. And that means getting Iraqis to fill the jobs to rebuild their own country, not Halliburton contractors, not occupying forces. We need to fix the unemployment problem in Iraq. That's one of the steps to regaining stability in the country. So what does that mean? That means from today's viewpoint, we're largely looking at financing the reconstruction projects and not doing this ourselves.
Mike, what do you think about that? Do you think it's a possibility to withdraw the troops from Iraq, the troops that are fueling the insurgency, and still be there as an American presence just to rebuild? Do you think we'd be welcome at any level?
Yes, ma'am. That is absolutely possible. Because right now, the Iraqis, when curfew is not in effect, run anywhere from 40 to 60% unemployment. And when we went through the Great Depression as a country, we ran anywhere from, what, 30 to 25%, and how much that, you know, psychologically affected our country. And, you know, just to imagine that on, you know, that wide of a scale, you know, once the American soldiers actually leave the country, the Iraqis will actually start to take over and take destiny, charge of where the country is going. And they, once these, you know, service industries, construction industries actually start to come together, and then the whole country as a whole will start, you know, start to pick up and actually get on moving in the direction we need to move into. And one of the arguments that I heard is, you know, if we leave now, then, you know, the Iraqis will descend into chaos, is that the Iraqis themselves won't allow that to happen, because right now they're in a common fight against us as the Americans. And once we're gone, that enemy's gone, so that there's no need for them to fight. And they won't turn around and start fighting each other, because they've learned to live with each other before that.
Exactly. Well, very interesting. I'm glad to know that you guys have such faith in the process. I sit back sometimes and I wonder how the possibilities could ever work themselves out. But right now, before our audience questions, we're going to have a prize giveaway. Tonight's giveaway is the Peace DVD. It's a film by Gabriella Zaffirini and Lorenzo Miccoli, which gives a look at the 21st century peace movement through interviews, discussions, and comments about the Iraqi war, terrorism, September 11, and other topics. Such notables as Gore Vidal, Amnesty International, Susan Sarandon, Pete Seeger, Amy Goodman, Angelo Davis, Pacifica Radio Network, Noam Chomsky, and Howard Zinn are interviewed in this film. The third person to type the correct answer in the text will win, and we'll announce it after our first question by our audience. Now, the question is, our guest Tim Goodrich helped co-found what organization? Okay, guys. Let's see what they've got going on here.
Let's do it.
Okay. We don't want to stress them out. They have enough problems trying to create peace in the world through Pal Talk. Okay, we're going to go directly into our audience questions since we did start a little bit late, and I know you guys have to be out of here on time, and we are so proud to have you with us, gentlemen. We really are. Our first question is going to come from Peace Lover, who happens to be the producer and founder of this show. Peace Lover, if you would come to the mic, state your name, and address the individual that you would like the question answered by, either or both. And if it's both, Tim, you go first, and then Mike, you can pick up. Peace Lover, what is your question?
Yeah, my name is Mike from California. Hi, Mike and Tim. My question is to both of you. Since I believe that this administration lied to get us into Iraq in the first place, and since so many, as I understand it, 50,000 troops have been withdrawn from Iraq and Afghanistan due to severe mental and or physical trauma, doesn't that make this administration criminally responsible? I believe not only should they be impeached, I believe they should be tried for war crimes. Thank you.
Go ahead, Tim.
Well, I'm right in line with you. I believe in the impeachment of our president and vice president to investigate the wrongdoings that have occurred, and included in that, war crimes would be applicable if they were found to be guilty of bringing our country to war based on lies.
Mike, could you go ahead and...
Yes, Peace Lover, I would please find the courage to get into your congressmen, your senators, and let them know exactly how you feel. And tell them to take the fight directly to Washington. because we can't allow, you know, this administration to, you know, to pretty much represent us in the world and, you know, to pretty much send the message to the rest of the world that Americans are warmongering, you know, greedy, opportunistic, you know, lying people.
Thank you. All right. Mesa, have you got, before we take our next question from our audience, do you have a winner for us so that we can announce it? Who's the winner? That's what we want to know. Who wins? Isn't that what this is all about? I guess Mesa's trying. Brother Thomas has won the DVD. Congratulations, Brother Thomas. You can approach Mesta in her PMs and give her the information so she can get the DVD to you. And thank you very much for participating in our show. Our next question is coming from Wrestling Freak. Wrestling Freak, please tell us who you want the questions addressed to, your name, and where you're calling from. Wrestling Freak, or has he still got a go wrestling? Okay, we'll take then we'll take a question from Wolf Dancer. Wolf Dancer 55, if you'll come to the mic and you know the routine, who do you want to ask the question to and your name and where you're calling from, Wolf?
Hi, I'm Art from Pittsburgh. I'm a former Vietnam veteran against the war, the Vietnam War, and I'm also against this war. I want to know how you guys came to the conclusion, a personal conclusion, that this war was wrong. Did you feel that way while you were there or when you got back? I know I felt personally when I was there, and there was times that I would refuse orders. Thank you very much, guys. Appreciate you being here.
Tim, go right ahead.
Well, thank you for the question, Mark, and thank you for your service to our country. Unfortunately, just like you in Vietnam, today's veterans are faced with much the same story, fighting a war that they don't believe in. And for me, it was a very, it was a long roundabout way to come to realize that this war was wrong. And that a lot of wars that we fight here in the United States are wrong. And it took a couple of years, actually. My first two deployments, the first time helping to patrol the no-fly zones over Iraq, and also I was helping to provide direct combat support for Afghanistan, I asked no questions. In fact, I was even up on the ladders inside the B-1 bomber bomb bays signing bombs that were about to be dropped over Afghanistan. And it wasn't until later on my final deployment, when the involvement with Iraq started to intensify, that I started to ask questions. And once I started asking a couple of questions, it just all snowballed and compounded. And I learned more about U.S. foreign policy. Later came to learn more when I traveled to Iraq as a civilian and saw things firsthand. I learned that I couldn't trust my government while I was in the military. So I decided to go to Baghdad on Christmas break in January of 2004 and see things for myself. And what I saw there disgusted me and compelled me to speak out even more.
Mike, would you like to address the question?
Yes. I myself came to the conclusion that the war was wrong from the 16 words that were uttered in the State of the Union address that were, you know, that we know that Iraq was sought uranium from Niger. And then after the fact, when that story later turned out to be false, and then just the smear campaign that, you know, that was released from there, it kind of just sent up all sorts of red flags of why, you know, why is this administration such in a rush to go to war, and especially when it's at a target that isn't directly affected by the war on terrorism. And it pretty much just, the evidence that was presented did not add up for a justification for attacking another country, and especially a preemptive attack against another country. And once that kicked off, it was, it's pretty much inside of me. It said, you know what, I have to come to my own conclusion on this. And I pretty much eventually just came to the decision that this war was unjust. But I still, being a service member, I put the lives of my soldiers, of soldiers first. And I will continue to serve the soldiers as long as I remain in the United States service. But once I'm out, I will pretty much pick up full activism and, you know, speak out against war every chance I get.
Well, just so you'll know, it never made any sense to us either, gentlemen. So you're not alone in this battle. We are behind you on every level. Our wrestling freak, now that you are free to speak, please come to the mic and address our guests, Tim Goodrich and Mike, with your question, where you're calling from, and your name, please.
Okay, thank you very much. First of all, I'm Ray from Nebraska, and thank you for your service, and thank you for being here. My question quickly is, the President of the United States said he's going to stay the course. He will not be deterred from his course of action. My question to you is, overwhelmingly, we're told that the military supports this endeavor, and the soldiers do. Can either one of you answer the question, if you know the answer, how many per se are actually for the war as opposed to against the war? Thank you.
Well, Ray, it's hard to put a concrete number percentage-wise on who's for the war and who's against it, other than, say, that Military Times poll that I quoted earlier that showed that 72% of the troops want the troops to be out of Iraq by the end of this year, and 29% want them home immediately. But what it largely depends on is what unit the soldier happens to be serving in. Different units have different roles. They see different areas of the country. Some are safer than others. Some are worse than others. And depending on what unit you are and your job in the military largely defines what your stance is on the war.
Mike?
From my instance, from my unit itself, it pretty much ranged from anywhere from 20% were against, 60% were in the middle, and 20% have supported it. And we were all just had open discussions about how we felt about it and why we were serving. And this was all actually why we were in Iraq. So a lot of us were just, and pretty much everybody, no matter how they felt about the war, was just anxious to come home, was just anxious to actually get back to the States.
Thank you. Yeah, I can understand that. Our next audience participant is Minuetta Exports. Minuet, if you'll come to the mic, address our guests with your question, and tell us where you're calling from and your name, please.
Good evening. My name is Claudia, and I'm calling, I'm actually living in Argentina. I'm a veteran of the U.S. Army and an American citizen also, born here in Argentina. Just wanted to ask you a question. Are you aware that our Constitution has been rescinded by the Patriot Act II, and that, and this is for both of you actually, once this administration is impeached, because I believe that our that they have passed too many laws, and that they are doing too much to turn the wheels back now. Are you not afraid that you will be tried for the war crimes that are being committed over there in Iraq along with this administration?
No, ma'am. I actually do not fear coming under any kind of legislation or trial, for war crimes, because I guess you can say it's the Nazi defense of the fallen orders, but my unit itself made sure it stayed within Geneva Convention when performing its military duties. So,
thank you, Mike. Tim, do you have anything to offer on that?
Well, yeah, I just wanted to add, and although the main topic of discussion tonight isn't the Patriot Act, the Constitution still applies. And under this administration, we're seeing a lot of instances where different provisions within our Constitution are being rolled back. Just the other day, there was a controversial Supreme Court decision that rolled back some of the protections in the Fourth Amendment under search and seizure. So we do have to be vigilant and stand up for our rights here as well as soldiers abroad.
Do you believe our rights are being threatened, Tim?
Absolutely, our rights are being threatened, and that's the goal of the administration. We're living in scary times right now.
We certainly are. Our next audience participant is Crossing the Rubicon. Crossing, could you come to the mic, address our guests, Tim and Mike, and tell us where you're calling from and what your name is?
Yes, I'm Jim, and I'm calling from up Florida right now. And I just want to ask the people, I don't know if they're still in the military right now, I just want to ask you if you know anything about the death squads and militias that are roaming around Iraq right now. Can you guys hear me? There's this big...
We can hear you, you're fine.
...deception that, the terrorists are killing innocent Iraqis, it's Al-Qaeda. Well, actually, when you look at it, these people killing other Iraqis, dragging them out of their homes, are part of militias or death squads that are being funded by the Iraqi government and the U.S. government. I just want to know if you know anything about that, and if you do, if you can like contribute to what's really going on. That's my question right now.
Yes, that is a very pertinent question. The death squads are participating in some of the violence in Iraq. As far as terrorists killing the Iraqis, we don't have concrete numbers on how many attacks they do versus how many attacks Iraqis do, because a lot of times we don't know who the attackers are. But less than 10% of the fighters being killed or captured in Iraq are terrorists. So the argument that we have to stay there or they're going to attack us over here is invalid, because only a small number of the fighters are people from other countries, Al-Qaeda-like operatives. As far as the violence inside the country, this is a new phenomenon because we had never seen this before U.S. Came into the country of Iraq. These sectarian conflicts that are happening between the Sunnis, the Kurds, and the Shias, while the tensions always were there, it was also a very secular intermixed society where the different sects would intermarry and work together on a daily basis. And since the U.S. has come into there, the tensions have increased, and that's why we're seeing a rise in this sectarian violence. And it will only continue as long as we stay there. And many people believe this is one of the goals of the U.S. to divide and conquer. As long as they're fighting each other, we don't have to worry about them fighting the United States.
Mike, would you like to contribute to anything to that?
Tim wrapped up just part. Pretty much stated it.
Sounds great, even though we are talking about death squads. Isn't that an amazing thing? That's all right. Yeah, I'm just being, you know, it's almost profound and prolific in its irony that, you know, we have become, we here as Americans are sitting around talking about, you know, being part and parcel of the death of innocent people, and it's sad, and it's you know, it's almost to the point of making you wonder about everything. It's shaking the foundation, I believe, of the United States as we have grown to love it. But our next question, we have two more questions, and then we'll be ending this evening. Our next audience participant is Carmen, a good friend of mine. Carmen, could you come to the mic, tell us who you are, and your questions for the gentleman tonight?
Hi, my name is Carmen. I'm from Austin, Texas, and I just want to know. The other day, it was reported in the media that the Prime Minister in Iraq was thinking about giving amnesty to all the insurgents except those that killed Iraqis. In other words, the ones that had killed some of our soldiers, they would still get amnesty, and of course that caused a big ruckus over here. I want to know how you guys, what do you guys think of that? You know, I feel like that's giving them a free ticket in the middle of the war before you're out of there, to tell them that they're going to get amnesty anyways, like saying, well, come on, you know, go ahead and kill the soldiers. And another thing, have you ever seen any of the contractors misbehaving? The people, the security people that are, you know, for Halliburton and the contractors, did they ever get caught doing anything illegal? Go ahead. Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Well, yes, that was a very controversial issue that the Prime Minister of Iraq brought up the other day. And we've got to understand that the politicians in Iraq are in a very tough spot. Not only do they have to satisfy three different factions within Iraq, they also have to satisfy the U.S. politicians. And it's a continual balancing act, and I don't know how they do it. It has to be a very stressful job. There's two different schools of thought on this. The first school of thought is that Iraqis have the right to resist an illegal, immoral occupation, and that anybody that does attack the U.S. forces is right to do so and should be granted amnesty. Now, the other school of thought is that the Iraqis who kill or injure U.S. soldiers in their attacks as a resistance member should be prosecuted and should be punished. And it's a very dividing question. It's a loaded question. And basically, I think each person has to make their own decision on what is right and what is moral. Personally, I don't advocate the killing of any human being. And I think that we're going to be faced with more tough questions like this as long as the U.S. remains in Iraq.
I'll go ahead and field the contractor question. I actually served right alongside the contractors, and we had several contractors fired for misbehavior. It wasn't anything directly to do with Iraqis, but pretty much violating the policies and why they're of the United States while they're in Iraq, like purchasing liquor or you know, trying to solicit Iraqis for prostitution. And as soon as if there's any kind of misbehavior that is sensed by any of the command, the contractors are nearly fired. But on the other hand, you have to remember that contractors were a big part of the Abu Ghraib scandal. And even I personally do not like contractors, because the only people that they're responsible to is the people who hired them and themselves. And they, and pretty much up until the point where they feel that they're going to lose their job, they are free to do pretty much whatever they want. But as soon as any kind of misbehavior is sensed, they are instantly terminated and gone.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. You know, I'm going to ask you both one more question. Excuse me. And I'm sorry, that'll be all of our audience questions. Tim, Mike, is it anti-American to be anti-war in Iraq?
Absolutely not. One of our former famous politicians said the Senate is the highest form of patriotism, and I really do believe that. In order to have an active, functioning democracy, we need to ask questions of our governing officials and make sure they stay on the straight and narrow, because we all know how easy it is for our politicians to stray off the course and go crooked. So we need to make sure to keep them in check. As if you want to consider the people of the United States of America as a fourth branch of government, I think that's fair. And seeing this is the last time I'll be speaking here tonight, I just wanted to remind people that if you served since September 11th, 2001, or you have a friend or relative who has, please go to ivaw.org and be sure to get a free copy of Sir No Sir out to that person. And also, Iraq Veterans Against the War, we're involved in many projects and educating the public, and these type of activities require a lot of money. So I just request that if you agree with our mission statement and you are able to, please support us financially.
Absolutely. You heard it, guys. Do you have anything to add to that, Mike? Any closing statements you'd like to make?
That is pretty much the fourth branch government has to step up to the plate on this. The people have to let their voices known and heard that they will not accept war based upon lies. That if you feel that this war is illegal and immoral, don't allow people to, you know, to pretty much tell you that you're a coward or that because you don't feel that killing innocent people is, you know, correct, that, you know, that you're un-American. You tell them that it's American to defend, it's American to protest, and that soldiers who are fighting today are fighting for the right to protest, and that we want to hear their voices and hear what they have to say and hear that they support the soldiers by bringing them home and bringing them home safely.
Well, thank you, gentlemen, for being here tonight. It was an honor, and it's an honor to know men like you and know that we have men in the military that do know the truth and that are speaking out. Thank you, and if you will stay with us for just a few minutes after the show, so we can thank you. I'd like to thank Carrie Minaj, our board director, who does all the everything for this show except talk. Our next guest is Corey Rowe, producer of Loose Change 911, second edition. That'll be next week at 8 o'clock Central Time in Pal Talk and on CWRN, Cosmic Wave Radio Network. I'd like to thank our guests once again. I'd like to thank our audience participants and congratulate our winners for tonight. Enjoy the DVD. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be closing with Annie DeFranco, This Land Is Your Land. And it means a lot tonight.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the table by the relief of I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me.